on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, July 13th edition of InvestTalk, and Greece is saved. Greece is... It's been saved over the weekend. Everything's great. That's why the market was up big today. But the question is it really? We're going to talk about that. What were the details? Now, when you're joining us on radio or online streaming on investtalk.com or being a podcast subscriber on iTunes and other avenues that you can get podcasts these days, when you are listening to us in one of those three avenues, we encourage all of you to join in the program. Participate. We love your questions. It makes our show better. We like to hear what our listeners are thinking about on a daily basis, and it helps us tailor the show to your needs, and that's what the show is all about. Helping you make better financial decisions. And I want to keep you tuned in with the program by tuning into your mind and what is on your mind. And our mission is to help you become a better than average investor. Now, InvestTalk works best when you participate. And besides your questions, we want to hear your investment stories. What mistakes have you made? What was the best investment decision you've ever made? And why do you think it was a success? What is the best advice you've received? What is the worst advice you received? You can tell us about a lot of different things. We'd love to hear what's in your portfolio, what type of companies you're looking at. We'll help you sort it out, figure out, is this where you really need to be? Are you having the proper mindset to make good investment decisions? We have a 24-hour listener line. You can talk to us live Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific time, but you can call that 24-hour listener line and ask your question. We will answer it on the next show. Now, we're always encouraging you to join our InvestTalk Insider list, and one of the assets that members have access to is a list of dividend-paying ETFs. It's one of the more popular items on that list, and in the age of low or no interest rates, folks have caught dividend fever, and it's completely understandable because people are starved for yield. But there's an aspect about dividend-paying stocks that is often overlooked, and dividends often provide investors with the opportunity to take advantage of the power of compounding, and it is a valid strategy, but it also is not without its risks. So we're going to talk about that later this hour on InvestTalk 101. But let's get to work answering your questions. We want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. And we'll take this question now from our 24-hour listener line.
Hi, my name is Ryan. I'm from Las Vegas, and I listen to you on Stitcher. My question is, currently 30 years old and recently came into some cash. I have about $400,000 in assets, $180,000 in real estate, and about $200,000 in cash. I currently make about $50,000 to $60,000 a year and only have a Roth IRA, which I max out every year. My question is, if you were in my shoes with the knowledge that you know now, what would be a good beginning strategy to invest the $200,000? At my age, I'm willing to risk between 10 and 20% high. If you could give me any insight on what your opinion would be, I'd greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, so he's trying to figure out how he should be invested. He has, it sounds like he's inheriting $400,000, has $180,000 in real estate, $200,000 in cash, making $50,000, $60,000 a year. You know, that's about the median income in America. He's 30 years old, so he's relatively young. One thing I like, 180,000 in real estate, you're not over leveraged there. I see so many people, they have the vast majority of their assets tied to real estate. Not usually the best strategy. So you have a relatively appropriate amount of exposure to real estate. So that's good. You have 200,000 in cash. Another 400,000 sounds like it's coming in. You know, you said that you're willing to accept 10 to 20% drawdown, it sounds like. Now, that's pretty wide range. Sounds like, it doesn't sound like it's a wide range, but it is a fairly wide range. The S&P 500 is about at that 20% level, right? Over any given year, some years were down a little bit more, but you know, 20%, that happens. And if you are invested in a lot of equities, you should have that risk tolerance. So are you closer to 20 or are you closer to 10? You know, we have a risk tool on our website called by a company called Riskalyze that we use, and we use it for our clients. It's free for even non-clients, but we use it for our clients to get a good assessment of their risk tolerance. It gives a score of 1 to 99. Obviously, the higher that is, the more risk you're willing to take. And it's free. You can go to investtalk.com, take it. So I think that's a good starting point. The S&P is an 80. Right, S&P is about an 80 on that risk scale. If you are more in the 10% risk tolerance drawdown level, you would be more moderate. So that's talking about more value investing, dividends, incorporating some decent level of bond exposure, talking 30 to as high as 50%. So I think a lot of it really, really depends on if you're closer to that 10 or closer to that 20. You are young, so you can take more risk. Now is probably not the best time to take that risk, but it's certainly you're certainly in that space where you should have significant equity exposure. So I'm going to say you want 60 to 80% of your money invested in equities, and then you know, that 20% or so or more in fixed income, high-grade corporate bonds, that's probably the best place to be, at least for now. And so, you know, it can get very complex. You can see how complex it can get. Go online, take that risk questionnaire that we have on investtalk.com. Give us a call. We can talk a little bit more in depth and hopefully figure out what your goals are. When do you plan to retire? You know, there's so many variables. You gave me some good ones, but I don't know if you gave me enough to get a full sense of your picture. And, you know, that's kind of what Steve does in his portfolio reviews, is try to get that full picture of our client's financial situation. Now, when is it risky to be conservative with stocks? That's our main talking point today. And, you know, it's kind of along the veins of that question of how much should you have? How much money should you have in equities of your portfolio? And everyone's different. You know, the right investment strategy ultimately is one that balances your goals, both short-term and long-term, your risk tolerance, you as an individual, and how susceptible are you to swings in the market, meaning emotionally susceptible. Some people can't take a lot of swings in their portfolio. Some people can. So that's your risk tolerance right there. That's that risk questionnaire I was talking about. And then your time horizon. He's 30, right? And not everyone out there is 30. Some people are a lot older. Maybe there's a few younger people out there. So it's all those things that factor in to how you should be invested. And we're going to get to that coming up sometime this hour. I also want to talk about the Greek deal. Hashtag this is a coup. That has been trending on social media all throughout the past 18 hours or so, ever since Greece came to an agreement late last night with the Eurogroup members. And it seems like the terms of the next bailout, the third Greece bailout, are more onerous than what the Greek people shot down in the referendum just, what, a week ago? A little over a week ago? So it's not like they won. It doesn't seem like they really won. Their tactics really played a positive end result, or created a positive end result for Greece. It seems like they're going to stay in the euro, but they're going to have to do some things quick here within their parliament to get approved so that they can get the money and not default on their payment to the IMF coming up in a week from today, July 20th. So I would say we've, for the time being, averted a Greek exit from the euro. I think the odds of it in the short term are still are now pretty low, but I still think in the long term Greece will leave the euro at some point. Okay? So we're going to talk about that. And I want to talk about muni bonds. Are municipal bonds, are things that you don't know about municipal bonds that might hurt you? It's an asset class that most people think are safe, but that's not always the case. So we're going to talk about that. And then if we get to it, I want to talk about Shark Tank. Do you know the details behind Shark Tank? A little, some of the details about what goes on behind the scenes and the deals that are made and the companies that go on that show. I think that'll be interesting to discuss as well. But ultimately, I want to hear from you. And I mentioned our InvestTalk Insiders a few minutes ago. And another benefit to joining is that you've have the key to a whole library of recorded webinars that we've done throughout the last few years. The latest one on global investing is ready to play anytime, and it's all there. There's about 11 of them in all. To become an InvestTalk Insider, just go to investtalk.com. No investment is required. It's free. Check in now with your questions about your 401k choices or any money matters at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, my name is Austin. I'm from Boise, Idaho, and I subscribe to your podcast. And I have a question for you about the stock regarding Micron Technology, their symbol, Mike Uniform. And I want to know when's a good time for me to start investing with that company. Thank you.
All right, he's looking at Micron Technologies. I remember this. I believe it was about 2 weeks ago, maybe more. Yeah, 2 to 3 weeks ago. We had a caller call in, and I think it was hanging around $24 a share, Micron. And I think we both said, Steve and I said, nah, I wouldn't buy it yet. It still hasn't kind of reached that bottom capitulation point. And then a couple of days later, came out with earnings and tanked hard. Went from 24 and change, closed the day at 19 and change, went as low as 17 and change, and now we're at 17.61, just slightly off those lows. And I believe I said, if I'm not mistaken, that look for the mid-teen range to pick this up. And now we're starting to get there. So I wouldn't say you're there yet. 1650 or so is a big support level. So I would wait at least until that level to start getting involved. Micron is a good company, but it is very high risk. And this is just what it's similar to most semiconductor companies. They're very volatile. Micron's beta is 1.74, meaning it's 74% more volatile than the overall market. And you can see why it's cratered so much. It hit a high this year of $36 a share, and it's been pretty much overcut in half, 50%. And the reason is that earnings 2014 were $3.13, and this year they're only supposed to make 271, next year 259. Revenues are now falling 3%, whereas in November of 2013 they were up 120%. And this is typical for semiconductor companies. They are very cyclical. They're prone to oversupply. Earnings fluctuate rapidly. So I think for the long term, this is actually starting to be a good level. So I would step in here, like I said, around 1650. If your time horizon is long and you can handle volatility, that's a good level to get into. And then the next level after that is about $12 a share. And that's where I'd really back up the truck.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. When the market takes a steep dive, don't sell everything and run for the hills. We have the top 10 ways to protect your portfolio from fluctuating markets. That's our talking point for Tuesday's podcast.
We have James on the line. Hold on real quick. I want to talk quickly about the market today. We had the Dow up 218 points. The NASDAQ was up 74 points. The S&P was up 23 to 2100 at the close. And it was really on the back of a positive news out of Greece that they came to a deal. They're going to seem to, for now, have averted a Grexit. I know you've heard that term a million times, but, you know, a Greece exit from the euro, which seemed fairly likely late last week, as, you know, the Greek people voted no to the referendum of austerity. And it seems like these new measures are just as bad. So that's why the market was really up today. You had interest rates up, the market was up, dollar was up a little bit, which was interesting because you would think, well, Greece went through, you know, they made an agreement, right? And that should strengthen the euro. Well, it didn't. It weakened the euro, actually. So good day in the market, but we still have a lot of work to do to work off the consolidation and the small pullback that we've had in the S&P over the past month or so. And, you know, I don't think stocks are out of the woods yet for the summer. Let's go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm good. How's it going tonight, Justin?
Great. What can I do for you?
I wanted to know, now that the Kraft Heinz merger is complete, might that KHC be a potential candidate to maybe invest in for like a short-term jump, perhaps?
Well, it's gone from about 71 when it came out, and it's at, now it's 78.83. So it's up over 10% since it debuted back in, let's see, July 6th. So just a little over a week, and you know, 10% move in a company like Kraft, or a company with as big a revenue base as Kraft, is pretty big. So you know, it's hard to know in the short term, you know, where that's gonna finally settle out. You know, I wouldn't be this. There's much better names out there to be playing a short-term move. But if you think the valuations on Kraft are attractive, then I wouldn't mind jumping into it, because obviously it's a good solid company. But for a short-term move, I don't know if that's really the type of name that I would be investing in.
So comparatively, at this point, I know it's gone down a lot in recent times, but would you say at this point, I believe it's just over $11, would JDSU be a better candidate?
JDSU. Are you talking about short-term, like just a quick trade?
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe, you know, a short-term, I don't know, hold it for a month, see if there's any momentum to be had.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly support down here at about $11 or so. So, you know, from a technical perspective, there's a lot more to work off of, because obviously you have history. With KHC, you don't really have any history of support and resistance, et cetera. Where JDSU, you're at support, but it doesn't look like a name that is going to have lasting support here. I think it'll eventually get below $11 a share. So if you're looking short term, yes, JDSU, I'm a fan, getting back into the $12 range. Sell it, move on, make your, you know, 8-10% or so. But beyond that, a short-term trade, I wouldn't be investing in JDSU for the long term.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks.
All
for
right. Thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks for calling, James. Appreciate it. That was James from New York. Now let's talk a little bit about when it's risky to be too conservative with stocks. And we get a lot of questions. I get a lot of questions from younger people asking me, how should I be invested? And older people as well. This applies to really everybody. And I talked a little bit earlier about this, and that everybody has their own correct investment strategy for themselves. It's rare that two people should have the exact same. I don't want to say rare. Not all the time do the people with the same age, making the same amount of money, should have the same type of portfolio. It varies based on a lot of factors versus your goals. Are you looking for short term to buy a house or a car or go back to school, whatever it is? Are you looking long-term for retirement? Are you in retirement or very close to retirement and you need to start thinking short-term? So what are your goals? That's first. Then what is your risk tolerance? Can you handle volatility? Should you handle volatility? Because that's something else as well. It's not only can you handle volatility, but some people have enough money and their goals are modest enough to where they shouldn't be taking a lot of risk, even if they have the emotional wherewithal to do so. So it's all about that risk tolerance. And then, you know, your time horizon, like I said. You know, and a lot of young people growing up during the financial crisis, they have a bad taste in their mouth about equities. And that's understandable. But I have to understand that when equities are cheap, there's no better game in town, really. Finding great companies, even just indexing when the indexes are cheap, it's much better than cash, even better than real estate. I know a lot of people don't think so. And, you know, stocks have appreciated in the high single digits over the long term, where bonds are in the low single digits. Real estate's somewhere in between that. Okay? So understand what each asset class will do for you over the long run, not just what it did over recently. Okay? I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. You can reach me now at 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Ben in San Jose. How you doing, Ben?
How are you today?
Doing great.
I really enjoy your program.
I appreciate you listening.
Thank you very much. I have a question regarding advanced micro device.
Okay. AMD.
I posted equity at 370, went up to 460. I didn't sell because I'm trying to build a portfolio for long term. Mm-hmm. But additional for 270, went up to 360. I didn't sell. Mm-hmm. But more at 225. And to 270 to 276, I didn't sell. I'm just adding to my portfolio. I'm not trading on a day trading or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if I'm trying to build about 5,000 to 10,000 share total, and let it sit for 5 to 10 years.
Okay. So why advanced micro devices? I think is the first question.
They're in a semiconductor, and things like their chart, it looks at, you know, consolidation level, and it looks like pretty much at the lowest level they ever been, and they have a potential to move up, it seems like. That's all I know from the chart.
Yeah, well, see, from the chart perspective, it is, you know, near its lowest level it's ever been. Certainly support here at $2 a share or so. But my biggest worry is why, if the semiconductor sector is doing so well, are they doing so poorly? And they have, just like the Micron technologies that the caller called about before, AMD also has a very choppy earnings history. There's very little consistency. This is similar to a lot of semiconductor companies. They have big boom cycles and big bust cycles, and the big question is, can they handle the big bust cycles? The problem with advanced micro devices is they have a ton of debt, and their cash flow is negative, operating cash flow negative. They're losing money. Their book value per share is 2 cents per share, so pretty much nothing. This is not a company that I would be betting long-term on. They have no consistency of high return on investment capital, high return on equity, high margins, and they're saddled with a lot of debt. And, you know, semiconductors are not the type of companies you want to invest in with when they have a lot of debt, because a bust cycle like right now, and even the semiconductor cycle has been good over the past couple of years, just starting to weaken, and they didn't participate. So they have huge, huge issues. And if I were to bet, you know, this is high risk, and you certainly could make a lot of money. It could go from around $2 a share now and certainly turn themselves around, and you made a ton of money. But it could also go bankrupt. And I would bet more likely that this is going bankrupt based on its history and based on the amount of debt it holds or is on its balance sheet, than I would that it's going to have some sustainable turnaround and you're going to make a bunch of money. So I think of this amount of money that you're trying to build and build a stake in this company, I think you're doing it for the wrong, you're just basically doing it with the wrong company. I like the idea, just you're picking the wrong company.
What do you recommend?
I recommend you sell it and find a company that has consistent earnings, that has high profitability levels on a consistent basis, that has a modest or low amount of debt level, has an economic moat around it, meaning that they can, they have a reason why they're doing so well, whether it's a brand, technology, whatever it is, that's keeping them in business and keeping their earnings moving forward. A company that is growing their revenue base, which AMD is not. And you know, they've been consistently shrinking since 2011. So no, AMD is not the company I would own. I would try to find a different company. You know, obviously Apple comes to mind, and I know you're probably going to say, well, Apple, it's trading at $125 a share, right? That's expensive, right?
Right.
Wrong. Yeah. Apple is a lot cheaper at $125 a share than AMD is at $2 a share. Do you understand that? Do you understand that concept?
Thanks so much for the information, and I keep on listening.
Thanks, Ben. It's an important concept. I think everybody should understand is the price you see in the marketplace of a particular company doesn't tell you whether that stock is cheap or expensive. It's what is the price of that stock compared to its earnings, its cash flow, its growth, its business model, its place in its industry, its products, its people involved. All these are factors to figure out whether a company is cheap or not. Just because something's trading at $2 a share doesn't mean it's cheap. In fact, if it's trading at $2 a share, especially when you see the market's near relative highs, and it's trading at $2 a share, the odds are it's closer that it's probably going to go bankrupt in the next bear cycle than that it's going to survive. And you lose all your money. Okay? So these are investment concepts that everybody needs to grasp and apply. Thanks for the call, Ben. Now let's go to, are we going to a voicemail? Oh, we're going to a talking point. So I want to talk about the Greek deal. Now there is a trending hashtag right now on Twitter and all the social media outlets throughout the world, and it's hashtag this is a coup. Now as soon as the announcement of the third bailout deal for Greece overnight, social media went wild. They slammed Germany and Europe as a whole for the strict conditions attached to this rescue program, with the hashtag, this is a coup. Now, what happened? Well, the Prime Minister, Alexis Tsipras, agreed to place Greek state assets, into a 50 billion euro trust fund. And they must pass legislation on reforms before its talks even start on receiving aid to avoid a default. If you talk to any strategists, they'll say that Tsipras has conceded to almost every demand by their creditors, and that Merkel and the other Euro leaders came out the winners, and they're going to easily get this through their parliament because of the onerous aspects on Greece. And many are saying that it's humiliating Greece. And the hashtag, this is a coup, was even used by Paul Krugman, a well-known economist. And he says, suppose you consider Tsipras as an incompetent twerp. Suppose you dearly want to see Syriza out of power. Suppose even that you welcome the prospect of pushing those annoying Greeks out of the euro. Even if all this is true, this Eurogroup list of demands is madness. The trending hashtag, this is a coup, is exactly right. This goes beyond harsh into pure vindictiveness, complete destruction of national sovereignty, and no hope of relief. So it just goes to show you that even outside economists see this as a complete capitulation by Greek leaders. And it's interesting to see if he can get this through parliament at the Greek level. Odds are still probably good that they will. But a major part of this deal insist upon it by Germany was that Greece transfer 50 billion euros worth of public assets into a privatized fund so that they're sold off with the proceeds used to repay its debt. And the Greek parliament now has until Wednesday, just a couple days, to pass laws on sales tax rises, pension reform, before any new rescue funds will be released. So that's what you've seen here, complete capitulation. The positive is that a lot of these reforms were needed. A lot of the reforms that are demanded in this are needed for the Greek economy, which is an economy that is highly inefficient, that needs a lot of reform. And it's the reason why they're in this situation. And this really is a good opportunity for them to implement these measures in record time. Does it mean it's not a coup? No, I probably think it is a coup. But it's something that Greece needs. It needs the reform. I don't think they need to sell off 50 billion in assets. I just think they need the reforms. And they need debt relief, which they still didn't get. And I think they still will eventually leave the euro. Maybe not in the short term, but in the long term, it's assured. Now time for Invest Talk 101. Dividend distributions are a way for companies to offer a portion of the company's earnings to its owners, the shareholders. Dividends also give investors the opportunity to take advantage of the power of compounding. Compounding in this context is about reinvesting those dividends. Now, dividend compounding occurs when a cash dividend is used to purchase additional shares of stock, thereby resulting in greater dividends in the future, and they just keep growing. Now, a dividend reinvestment plan, commonly known as a DRIP, is a plan offered by a company that allows investors to buy stock directly from the company without paying commissions and automatically reinvesting cash dividends by purchasing additional shares or fractional shares at the dividend payment date. This can be an excellent way for investors to take advantage of the compounding potential of dividends. Now, not all companies have DRIP plans, and they do not all operate exactly the same. So it's something to check in to and, you know, look at the details. And never put all your money into one company. Don't think that you just have one DRIP plan and you're set and you're good to go, no matter how big the company is. All companies are susceptible to big downturns and bankruptcy through their life. No company lasts forever, so don't tie yourself completely to one company. But a lot of those plans can be good, especially if they're big blue chip companies that you think will be around for decades. So that's Invest Talk 101. Do you have questions you'd like answered? Topics to discuss? Send me a note. Click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com.
Words to the wise. Matt Hogan quoted in today's Wall Street Journal, "It's all about savings, not saving enough money." He says, "We can fret about the Federal Reserve, we can worry about China, we can tie ourselves in knots thinking about a bond bubble bursting, but for the vast majority of people, the most important thing you can do is spend less money."
What money matter do you want to talk about? Now's the time. 888-99-CHART is how to get through to InvestTalk.
Hey, Stephen, Justin. This is Chris from Mobile. I wanted to get your all's take on Yahoo, ticker YHOO. They made a big play for fantasy sports recently, and wanted to get your fundamental and technical analysis on the company and if it's a good entry point right now. They've been struggling over the last few months, and just want to see if it's a good buy point. Thanks.
All right, he's looking at Yahoo, and I was actually in discussions in the office today about this very fact, that Yahoo is getting into fantasy sports. Think of FanDuel and DraftKings. I think it's gambling. I don't know how you not see it as gambling, but apparently it's fantasy sports, and it's a game of skill, not luck, so it's not. But, you know, it's an amazing business. It's people bet on basically one group of players, whether it's baseball players, football players, basketball players, whatever it is, versus another set of players. And they put money on it, and DraftKings, FanDuel, they get a cut. There's really no risk there. They get 10%, 20%. I don't know what they take, but they take a certain percentage. And Yahoo, which is the largest fantasy sports site in the world, they're going to start doing the same thing as DraftKings and FanDuel. And I think it's genius. There's no reason they shouldn't be doing it. I think there's a lot of upside to that business. And I definitely have Yahoo on my radar. Now, the big question is this the time to get in? The biggest problem with Yahoo right now is Alibaba. That company is very weak. You look at Baba, it's gone from $120 a share, hit a low of mid-70s or so. Now we're in the low 80s. And with problems in China, that could continue to feed into Alibaba, and that will affect the Yahoo's stock price. So I think in the short term, you're very susceptible to the swings in China, and that worries me. But I think long term, their move into fantasy sports is genius, or at least monetizing fantasy sports is genius. And for long term, I'm starting to like Yahoo, mainly because of that. Now, we do have time for another couple of questions. The lines are always open for you. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. You can reach me now at 888-99-CHART, and this is InvestTalk.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Did you know you can access a link to a related article associated with each day's main talking point? Also, you can click back to listings for the last 10 InvestTalk episodes and listen to them, each listing the topics and stocks discussed. Just go to investtalk.com.
Let's go to Joseph in Oakland. How are you doing, Joseph?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Doing good. What can I do for you?
I want to know if there's an advantage of receiving dividends from a real estate investment trust as opposed to a non-real estate investment trust stock.
Okay. So you're looking for the tax consequences, tax differential?
Well, what I was looking at in the real estate investment trust is that they're obligated to distribute on an annual basis as opposed to a non-REIT. Mm-hmm. You have to hope that the board of directors vote the dividend in.
Well, REITs have to pay 90% of their earnings out as a dividend. So they must do that. So they're just based on the tax code, they're obligated to do that. For an individual company, sure, they have to be approved by the board, but very rarely, unless a company is in dire financial situations, do they cut their dividend. They may not raise their dividend, but it's rare that they cut their dividend, and you'll know long beforehand, based on the price action, if they're cutting their dividend and based on their earnings. So yes, I guess there's some risk there, but it's very rare for them to stop that.
So which would be the better position, the REITs or the non-REITs?
I would say it depends. I would look at the growth of the company. What's the long-term growth potential of the company? You know, if you're looking at a utility, company? Well, you know, I think that, you know, you're not going to get a lot of growth there, so a REIT might be better. But REITs are different. You know, a mortgage REIT, their dividends are highly, highly risky. Whereas if it's a REIT that invests in maybe, say, medical properties, that's obviously a much steadier business. So it depends. There's no one size fits all. There's no blanket statement that I could tell you this is better than that. It all depends on what business you're talking about, because dividends come from a wide variety of companies and a wide variety of really types of REITs as well.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. Any other questions?
No, that answers my question. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling, Joseph. Have a good night. Let's you're talking about dividends. Let's talk quickly about muni bonds. Now, a lot of people think of muni bonds and they think safe. Well, that's not exactly what is the case for all muni bonds. There's a couple that came into a bank. This is before the financial crisis, and they had $2 million, and they wanted to invest in safe bonds, and they were putting into a variety of municipal issues and funds, and they thought they were set for a comfortable ride. Well, the financial crisis hit, and their portfolio bottomed out at about $1 million, so they lost about 50%, and that's obviously not safe. They weren't so safe after all. And what they didn't know about municipal bonds really hurt them. Now, first, when you invest in a municipal bond, your primary concern should be the issuer's ability to meet the financial obligations. Now, obviously, that's any bond, but municipal bonds as well. And municipal bonds are susceptible to bankruptcy and not paying out. Just look at what's happening in Puerto Rico. That's a municipal bond. Now, states, counties, and other local governments or their agencies issue municipal bonds, and there's a couple types. Two flavors, revenue and general obligation bonds. Revenue bonds are issued backed by specific streams of income. And there's two main categories of that, essential purpose and non-essential purpose. Essential purpose is like water, sewer systems, those type of things. And then non-essential purposes are for things like golf courses and hospitals, things like that. Then there's general obligation bonds, and these are usually the safer kind. And the reason is that the governing entity provides a full faith and credit pledge to bondholders, meaning that legally all available funds and taxing power are for debt service. So if they're having financial issues, they can just raise tax base and get more revenue to pay that debt. There's obviously different ratings by the rating agencies, etc. But you also have to understand that there are risks to municipal bonds. Most people think that they're super safe. They are the safer end of the investment spectrum, but they're not treasuries, that's for sure. So understand that. Now we're out of time for today. If you have more questions about dividends, as we talked about on Invest Talk 101, or the potential impact of the Greek financial crisis in your portfolio, or China, use our 24-hour listener line. Get your question to me, and I'll answer it on the next Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening. Enjoy your evening, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.